He's a very, very great many. There are probably more books in every single room of this house than you will ever read, and some of them are so valuable that I wouldn't hesitate to shoot you if you dared touch them. But because you're a clever girl, or so your father assures me, you wouldn't do that anyway, would you? Maggie didn't reply. Instead, she imagined standing on tiptoe and spitting three times into this old witch's face. However, Moe just laughed. "You haven't changed, Eleanor," he remarked. "A tongue as sharp as a paper knife. But I warn you, if you harm Maggie, I'll do the same to your beloved books." Eleanor's lips curled in a tiny smile. "Well said," she answered, stepping aside. "You obviously haven't changed either. Come in. I'll show you the books that need your help, and a few others as well." Maggie had always thought Mo had a lot of books. She never thought so again, not after setting foot in Eleanor's house. There were no haphazard piles lying around as they did at home. Every book obviously had its place. But where other people have wallpaper, pictures, or just an empty wall, Eleanor had bookshelves. The shelves were white and went right up to the ceiling in the entrance hall through which she had first led them, but in the next room and the corridor beyond it, the shelves were as black as the tiles on the floor. "These books," announced Eleanor with a dismissive gesture as they passed the closely ranked spines, "have accumulated over the years. They're not particularly valuable, mostly of mediocre quality, nothing out of the ordinary. Should certain fingers be unable to control themselves and take one off the shelf now and then," she added, casting a brief glance at Maggie, "I don't suppose the consequences would be too serious. Just so long as once those fingers have satisfied their curiosity, they put every book back in its proper place again and don't leave any unappetizing bookmarks inside." Here Eleanor turned to Mo. "Believe it or not," she said, "I actually found a dried-up slice of salami used as a bookmark in one of the last books I bought, a wonderful 19th-century first edition." Maggie couldn't help giggling, which naturally earned her another stern look. "It's nothing to laugh about, young lady," said Eleanor. "Some of the most wonderful books ever printed were lost because some fool of a fishmonger tore out their pages to wrap his stinking fish in. In the Middle Ages, thousands of books were destroyed when people cut up their bindings to make soles for shoes or to heat steam baths with their paper. The thought of such incredible abominations, even if they had occurred centuries ago, made Eleanor gasp for air. 'Well, let's forget about that,' she said, 'or I shall get overexcited. My blood pressure's much too high as it is.'" She had stopped in front of a door that had an anchor with a dolphin coiled around it painted on the white wood. "This is a famous printer's special sign," explained Eleanor, stroking the dolphin's pointed nose with one finger. "Just the thing for a library door, eh?"
"I know," said Maggie. "Aldus Minutius. He lived in Venice and printed books the right size to fit his customers' saddlebags."
"Really?" Eleanor wrinkled her brow, intrigued. "I didn't know that. In any case, I am the fortunate owner of a book he printed with his own hands in the year 1503.
"You mean it's from his workshop?" Maggie corrected her.
"Of course that's what I mean."
Eleanor cleared her throat and gave Mo a reproachful glance, as if it could only be his fault that his daughter was precocious enough to know such things. Then she put her hand on the door handle.
"No, child," she said as she pressed the handle down with almost solemn reverence, "has ever before passed through this door, but as I assume your father has taught you a certain respect for books, I'll make an exception today. However, only on the condition that you keep at least 3 paces away from the shelves. Is that agreed?"
For a moment, Maggie felt like saying, "No, it wasn't." She would have loved to surprise Eleanor by showing contempt for her precious books, but she couldn't do it. Her curiosity was too much for her. She felt almost as if she could hear the books whispering on the other side of the half-open door. They were promising her 1,000 unknown stories, 1,000 doors into worlds she had never seen before. The temptation was stronger than Meggie's pride.
Agreed, she murmured, clasping her hands behind her back. 3 paces.
Her fingers were itching with desire.
Sensible child, said Eleanor, so condescendingly that Meggie almost went back on her decision.
But then they entered Eleanor's Holy of Holies.
You've had the place renovated,
Meggie heard Mo say. He added something else, but she wasn't listening any more. She was just staring at the books. The shelves on which they stood smelled of freshly sawn wood. They went all the way up to a sky-blue ceiling with tiny lights in it, hanging there like stars. Narrow wooden stepladders on casters stood by the shelves, ready to help any reader up to the top shelves. There were reading desks with books lying open on them, held in place by brass chains that shone like gold. There were glass display cases containing books with pages stained by age, but showing the most wonderful pictures. Meggie couldn't resist moving closer. One step forward, a quick glance at Eleanor, who luckily had her back turned, and she was right beside the display case. She bent lower and lower over the glass until her nose was touching it. Prickly leaves twined around pale brown letters. A tiny red dragon's head was spitting out flowers over the stained paper. Riders on white horses looked at Meggie as if scarcely a day had passed since someone had painted them with tiny marten hair brushes. A man and woman stood beside them, perhaps a bridal couple. A man with a bright red hat was looking angrily at them.
"You call that 3 paces?"
Meggie spun around in alarm, but Eleanor didn't seem too angry.
"Yes, the art of illumination," she said. "Once only rich people could read, so the pictures painted around the letters would help the poor to understand the stories too. Of course, no one planned to give them pleasure. The poor were put into the world to work, not to have a nice time or look at pretty pictures. That kind of thing was only for the rich. No, the idea was to instruct the poor. Usually the stories came from the Bible, and everyone knew them anyway. The books were put in churches, and a page was turned every day to show a new picture."
"What about this book?" asked Meggie.
"I don't think this one was ever in a church," replied Eleanor. "More likely it was made for a very rich man to enjoy. It's almost 600 years old.
There was no missing the pride in her voice.
"People have committed murder for such a book. Luckily, I only had to buy it."
As she spoke these last words, she turned abruptly and looked at Dustfinger, who had followed them into the library, soundless as a prowling cat. For a moment, Meggie thought Eleanor would send him back into the corridor, but Dustfinger stood in front of the shelves looking so impressed, with his hands behind his back, that he gave her no reason to turn him out. So she just cast him a final, distrustful glance and turned back to Mo. He was standing at one of the reading desks with a book in his hand. Its spine hung only by a couple of threads. He held it very carefully, like a bird with a broken wing.
"Well?" asked Eleanor anxiously. "Can you save it? I know it's in terrible shape, and I'm afraid the others aren't in a much better way, but..."
"Oh, that can all be fixed."
Mo put the book down and inspected another.
"But I think it will take me at least 2 weeks. If I don't have to get hold of more materials, which could mean I need more time, will you put up with us that long?"
"Of course,"
Eleanor nodded, but Meggie noticed the glance she cast at Dustfinger. He was still standing beside the shelves near the door and seemed entirely absorbed in looking at the books. But Meggie sensed he had missed none of what was said behind his back. There were no books in Eleanor's kitchen, not one, but they ate an excellent supper there at a wooden table that came, so Eleanor assured them, from the scriptorium of an Italian monastery. Meggie doubted it. As far as she knew, the monks had worked at desks with sloping tops in the scriptoria of their monasteries, but she kept this information to herself. Instead, she took another slice of bread and was just wondering how nice the cheese standing on the supposed scriptorium table would be when she noticed Mo whispering something to Eleanor.
Since Eleanor's eyes widened greedily, Maggie concluded they could only be discussing a book, and she immediately thought of brown paper, a pale green linen binding, and the anger in Mo's voice. Beside her, Dustfinger surreptitiously slipped a slice of ham into his backpack for Gwyn's supper. Maggie saw a round nose emerge from the pack, snuffling in the hope of more delicacies. Dustfinger smiled at Maggie when he noticed her looking at him, and gave Gwyn some more ham. He didn't seem to find anything odd about Mo and Eleanor's whispering, but Maggie was sure the two of them were planning something secret. After a short time, Mo rose from the table and went out. Maggie asked Eleanor where the bathroom was, and followed him. It was a strange feeling to be spying on Mo. She couldn't remember ever doing it before, except the night before, when Dustfinger had arrived, and the time when she had tried to find out whether Mo was Santa Claus. She was ashamed of stealing after him like this, but it was his own fault. Why was he hiding the book from her? And now he might be going to give it to this Eleanor, a book Maggie wasn't allowed to see. Ever since Mo had hurriedly hidden it behind his back, Maggie hadn't been able to get it out of her head. She had even looked for it in Mo's bag before he loaded his things into the van, but she couldn't find it. She just had to see it before it disappeared, maybe into one of Eleanor's display cases. She had to know why it meant so much to Mo that, for its sake, he would drag her all the way here. He looked around once more in the entrance hall before leaving the house, but Maggie ducked down behind a chest just in time. The chest smelled of mothballs and lavender. She decided to stay in hiding there until Mo came back. He'd be sure to see her if she went outdoors. Time passed painfully slowly, as it always does when you're waiting for something with your heart thumping hard. The books in the white bookcases seemed to be watching Maggie, but they said nothing to her, as if they sensed that there was only one book Maggie could think about just now. Finally, Mo came back, carrying a package wrapped in brown paper. "Perhaps he's just going to hide it here," thought Maggie. "Where could you hide a book better than among 10,000 others?" Yes, Mo was going to leave it here, and then they'd drive home again. "But I would like to see it," thought Maggie, "just once, before it's put on one of those shelves I'm supposed to stay 3 paces away from." Mo passed her so closely she could have touched him, but he didn't notice her.
"Maggie, don't look at me like that," he sometimes told her. "You're reading my thoughts again."
Now he looked anxious, as if he wasn't quite sure he was doing the right thing. Maggie counted slowly to 3 before following her father, but a couple of times Mo stopped so suddenly, Maggie almost ran into him. He didn't return to the kitchen, but went straight to the library. Without looking back once, he opened the door with the Venetian printer's mark on it, and closed it quietly behind him. So there stood Maggie among all the silent books, wondering whether to follow him and ask him to show her the book. Would he be very angry? She was just about to summon up all her courage and go after him when she heard footsteps. Rapid, firm footsteps, quick and impatient. That could only be Eleanor. Now what? Maggie opened the nearest door and slipped through it. A 4-poster bed, a dresser, silver-framed photographs, a pile of books on the bedside table, a catalogue lying open on the rug, its pages full of pictures of old books. She was in Eleanor's bedroom. Heart thudding, she listened for noises outside. She could hear Eleanor's energetic footsteps and then the sound of the library door closing for the second time. Cautiously, she slipped out into the corridor again. She was still standing outside the library, undecided, when she felt a hand suddenly laid on her shoulder from behind. Another hand stifled her cry of alarm.
"It's only me," breathed Dustfinger into her ear. "Keep quiet. We're both in trouble, understand?"
Maggie nodded, and Dustfinger slowly took his hand away from her mouth.
"Your father's going to give the old witch that book, right?" he whispered. "Has he taken it out of the van? Tell me. He did have it with him, didn't he?"
Maggie pushed him away. "I don't know," she snapped.
Anyway, what business is it of yours?
What business is it of mine?
Dustfinger laughed quietly.
Well, perhaps I'll tell you some time. But just now all I want to know is whether you've seen it.
Maggie shook her head. She didn't know why she was lying to Dustfinger, perhaps because he had pressed his hand over her mouth a little too hard.
Maggie, listen to me.
Dustfinger looked at her intently. His scars were like pale lines that someone had drawn on his cheeks. Two slightly curved marks on the left cheek, a third and longer line on the right cheek, running from ear to nostril.
Capricorn will kill your father if he doesn't get that book,
hissed Dustfinger.
Kill him, do you understand? Didn't I tell you what he's like? He wants the book, and he always gets what he wants. It's ridiculous to believe it will be safe from him here.
Mo doesn't think so. Dustfinger straightened up and stared at the library door.
Yes, I know, he murmured. That's the trouble. And so, he said, putting both hands on Maggie's shoulders and propelling her toward the closed door, so now you're going to go in there, the picture of innocence, and find out what the pair of them are planning to do with that book. Okay.
Maggie was about to protest, but before she knew it, Dustfinger had opened the door and pushed her into the library. Chapter 5. Only a Picture. They had unwrapped the book. Maggie saw the brown paper lying on a chair. Neither of them noticed that she had come in. Eleanor was bending over one of the reading desks with Mo beside her. They both had their backs to the door.
Amazing! I thought there wasn't a single copy left, Eleanor was saying. There are strange stories about this book going around. A second-hand dealer from whom I buy quite often told me that 3 copies were stolen from him a few years ago, all on the same day, too, and I've heard much the same story from 2 other booksellers.
Really? Yes, very strange, said Mo, but Maggie knew his voice well enough to know he was only pretending to be surprised. Well, anyway, even if this wasn't a rare book, it means a lot to me, and I'd like to be sure it's in safe hands for a while, just till I come back for it.
All books are in safe hands with me, replied Eleanor, sounding cross. You know that. They're my children, my inkier children, and I look after them well. I keep the sunlight away from their pages. I dust them and protect them from hungry bookworms and grubby human fingers. This one shall have a place of honour, and no one will see it until you want it back. I don't really welcome visitors to my library. They just leave fingerprints and stray hairs in my poor books. Anyway, as you know, I have a very expensive burglar alarm system.
Yes, that's extremely reassuring. Mo's voice sounded relieved. Thank you, Eleanor. I really am most grateful. And if anyone comes knocking at your door in the near future, asking about the book, please will you make out you've never heard of it, all right?
Of course. I'd do anything for a good bookbinder, and anyway, you're my niece's husband. I really do miss her sometimes, you know. I expect you feel the same. Your daughter seems to be getting along all right without her, though.
She hardly remembers her mother, said Mo quietly.
Well, that's a blessing, wouldn't you say? Sometimes it's a good thing we don't remember things half as well as books do. But for them, we probably wouldn't know anything for very long. It would all be forgotten. The Trojan War, Columbus, Marco Polo, Shakespeare, all the amazing kings and gods of the past.
Eleanor turned around and froze.
Did I fail to hear you knock?
She asked, staring so angrily that Maggie had to summon up all her courage not to turn around and slip quickly back out into the hallway.
How long have you been there, Maggie? Asked Mo.
Maggie stuck her chin out.
She can see it, but you hide it away from me, she said.
Attack, she knew, is the best form of defense.
You never hid any book from me before. What's so special about this one? Will I go blind if I read it? Will it bite my fingers off? What terrible secrets are there in it that I shouldn't know?
I have my reasons for not showing it to you,
replied Mo. He looked very pale. Without another word, he went over and tried to lead her to the door, but Maggie tore herself away.
"Pig-headed, isn't she?" remarked Eleanor. "It almost makes me like her. Her mother was just the same, I remember. Come here."
She stepped aside and beckoned Maggie over.
"Look, you can see there's nothing very exciting about this book, at least not to you, but see for yourself. We're always most likely to believe the evidence of our own eyes. Or doesn't your father agree?"
She cast Mo an inquiring glance. Mo hesitated, then resigned himself and nodded. The book was lying open on the reading desk. It didn't seem particularly old. Maggie knew what really old books looked like. She had seen books in Mo's workshop with their pages spotted like leopard skin and almost as yellow. She remembered one with a binding that had been attacked by woodworms. The traces of their jaws had looked like tiny bullet holes, and Mo had gotten out his book block, carefully fixed the pages back together, then, as he put it, gave them a new dress. Such a dress could be made of leather or linen. It might be plain, or Mo might imprint a pattern on it with his tiny decorative stamps. This book was bound in linen, silvery green like willow leaves. The edges of the pages were slightly roughened, and the paper was still so pale that every letter stood out clear and black. A narrow red bookmark lay between the open pages. The right-hand page had an illustration on it showing women in magnificent dresses, a fire-eater, acrobats, and a man who looked like a king. Maggie turned the pages. There weren't many illustrations, but the first letter of each chapter was itself a little decorative picture. Animals sat on some of these initial letters, plants twined around others. One F burned bright as fire. The flames looked so real that Maggie touched them with one finger to make sure they weren't hot. The next chapter began with an N. An animal with a furry tail sat perched in the angle between the second and third strokes of the letter. "No one saw him slip out of town," read Maggie, but before she could get any further with the story, Eleanor closed the book in her face.
"I think that'll do," she said, tucking it under her arm. "Your father's asked me to put this book somewhere safe for him, and so I will."
Mo took Maggie's hand again, and this time she followed him.
"Please forget that book, Maggie," he whispered. "It's an unlucky story. I'll get you 100 others."
Maggie just nodded. Before Mo closed the door behind them, she caught a last glance of Eleanor standing there looking at the book lovingly, the way Mo sometimes looked at her when he put her to bed in the evening. Then the door was closed.
"Where will she put it?"
asked Maggie as she followed Mo down the corridor.
"Oh, she has some very good hiding places for such things," replied Mo evasively. "But they're secret, as hiding places should be. Suppose I show you your room now." He was trying to sound carefree and not succeeding particularly well. "It's like a room in an expensive hotel. No, much better."
"Sounds good,"
murmured Maggie, looking around. But there was no sign of Dustfinger. Where had he gone? She had to ask him something at once. That was all she could think of while Mo was showing her the room and telling her that everything was all right now. He just had to do his bookbinding work, then they'd go home. Maggie nodded and pretended to be listening, but her mind was full of the question she wanted to ask Dustfinger. It burned on her lips so fiercely, she was surprised Mo didn't see it there. When Mo left her to go and get their bags from the camper van, Maggie went into the kitchen, but Dustfinger wasn't there either. She even looked for him in Eleanor's bedroom, but however many doors in the huge house she opened, there was no sign of him. Finally, she was too tired to go on searching. Mo had gone to bed long ago, and Eleanor had disappeared into her own bedroom. So Maggie went to her room and lay down on the big bed. She felt very lost in it, like a dwarf, as if she had shrunk. Like Alice in Wonderland, she thought, patting the floral sheets. Otherwise, she liked the room. It was full of books and pictures,
and there was even a fireplace, although it looked as if no one had used it for at least 100 years. Maggie swung her legs out of bed again and went over to the window. Outside, night had fallen long ago, and when she pushed the window shutters open, a cool breeze blew on her face. The only thing she could make out in the dark was the gravel forecourt in front of the house. A lamp cast pale light over the grey and white pebbles. Mo's striped van stood beside Eleanor's grey car, like a zebra lost in a horse's stable. Maggie thought of the house they had left in such a hurry, and her room there, and school where her desk would have been empty today. She wasn't sure whether she felt homesick or not. She left the shutters open when she went back to bed. Mo had put her book box beside her. Wearily, she took out a book and tried to make herself a nice nest in its familiar words. But it was no good. Again and again the thought of that other book blurred the words. Again and again Maggie saw the big initial letters before her. Large, colourful letters surrounded by figures whose story she didn't know, because the book hadn't had time to tell it to her. "I must find Dustfinger," she thought sleepily. "He must be here somewhere." But then the book slipped from her fingers, and she fell asleep. The sun woke her the next morning. The air was still cool from the night before, but the sky was cloudless, and when Maggie leaned out of the window, she could see the lake gleaming in the distance beyond the branches of the trees. The room Eleanor had given her was on the first floor. Mo was sleeping only 2 doors farther along, but Dustfinger had to make do with an attic room. Maggie had seen it when she was looking for him yesterday. It held nothing but a narrow bed, surrounded by crates of books, towering up to the rafters. Mo was already sitting at the table with Eleanor when Maggie came down to the kitchen for breakfast. But Dustfinger wasn't there.
"Oh, he's had breakfast already,"
said Eleanor sharply when Maggie asked about him.
"Along with some animal like a Pomeranian dog. It was sitting on the table and it spat at me when I came into the kitchen. I wasn't expecting anything like that. I made it clear to your peculiar friend that flies are the only animals I allow anywhere near my kitchen table, and so he took the furry creature outside."
"What do you want him for?" asked Mo.
"Oh, nothing special. I just wanted to ask him something," said Maggie.
She hastily ate half a slice of bread, drank some of the horribly bitter cocoa Eleanor had made, and went out. She found Dustfinger behind the house, standing on a lawn of short, rather rough grass, where a solitary deck chair stood next to a plaster angel. There was no sign of Gwyn. A few birds were quarrelling among the red flowers of the rhododendron, and there stood Dustfinger, looking lost to the world and juggling. Maggie tried to count the coloured balls. 4, 6, 8. He plucked them out of the air so swiftly that it made her dizzy to watch him. He stood on one leg to catch them, casually, as if he didn't even have to look. Only when he spotted Maggie did a ball escape his fingers and roll at her feet. Maggie picked it up and threw it back.
"Where did you learn to do that?" she asked. "It looked, well, wonderful."
Dustfinger made her a mocking bow. There was that strange smile of his again.
"It's how I earn my living," he said, "with the juggling and a few other things."
"How can you earn a living that way?"
"At markets and fairs, at children's birthday parties. Did you ever go to one of those fairs where people pretend they're still living in medieval times?"
Maggie nodded. Yes, she had once been to a fair like that with Mo. There had been wonderful things there, so strange that they might have come from another world, not just another time. Mo had bought her a box decorated with brightly coloured stones, and a little fish made of shiny green and gold metal, with its mouth wide open, and a jingle in its hollow body that rang like a little bell when you shook it. The air had smelled of freshly baked bread, smoke and damp clothes, and Maggie had watched a smith making a sword and had hidden behind Mo's back from a woman in a witch's costume.
Dustfinger picked up his juggling balls and put them back in his bag, which was standing open on the grass behind him. Maggie went over to it and looked inside. She saw some bottles, some white cotton wool, and a carton of milk. But before she could see any more, Dustfinger closed the bag.
"Sorry, trade secrets," he said. "Your father's given the book to this Eleanor, hasn't he?"
Maggie shrugged her shoulders.
"It's all right, you can tell me. I know anyway, I was listening. He's mad to leave it here, but what can I do?"
Dustfinger sat down on the deck chair. His backpack was on the grass next to him, with a bushy tail spilling out of it. "I saw Gwyn," said Maggie.
"Did you?"
Dustfinger leaned back, closing his eyes. His hair looked even paler in the sunlight.
"So did I. He's in the backpack. It's the time of day when he sleeps."
"I mean, I saw him in the book." Maggie didn't take her eyes off Dustfinger's face as she said this, but it didn't move a muscle. His thoughts couldn't be read on his brow in the same way as she could read Moe's. Dustfinger's face was a closed book, and Maggie had the feeling that if anyone tried reading it, he would rap their knuckles. "He was sitting on a letter," she went on a capital N. "I saw his horns."
"Really?"
Dustfinger didn't even open his eyes.
"And do you know which of her thousands of shelves that book-mad woman put it on?"
Maggie ignored his question. "Why does Gwyn look like the animal in the book?" she asked. "Did you really stick those horns on him?" Dustfinger opened his eyes and blinked up at the sun.
"Did I?"
he inquired, looking at the sky. A few clouds were drifting over Eleanor's house. The sun disappeared behind one of them, and its shadow fell across the green grass like an ugly mark.
"Does your father often read aloud to you, Maggie?" asked Dustfinger.
Maggie looked at him suspiciously. Then she knelt down beside the backpack and stroked Gwyn's silky tail. "No," she said. "But he taught me to read when I was 5.
"Ask him why he doesn't read aloud to you," said Dustfinger, "and don't let him put you off with excuses."
"What do you mean?" Maggie straightened up, feeling cross. "He doesn't like reading aloud, that's all." Dustfinger smiled. Leaning out of the deck chair, he put one hand into the backpack.
"Ah, that feels like a nice full stomach," he commented. "I think Gwyn had good hunting last night. I hope he hasn't been plundering a nest again. Perhaps it's just Eleanor's rolls and eggs."
Gwyn's tail twitched back and forth, almost like a cat's. Maggie looked at the backpack with distaste. She was glad she couldn't see Gwyn's muzzle. There might still be blood on it. Dustfinger leaned back in Eleanor's deck chair.
"Shall I give you a performance this evening, show you what the bottles, the cotton wool, and all the other mysterious things in my bag are for?"
he asked without looking at her.
"It has to be dark for that, pitch dark. Are you scared to be outdoors in the middle of the night?"
"Of course not," said Maggie, offended, although really she was not at all happy to be out in the dark. "But first, tell me why you stuck those horns on Gwyn, and tell me what you know about the book." Dustfinger folded his arms behind his head.
"Oh, I know a lot about that book," he said. "And perhaps I'll tell you sometime, but first the two of us have a date. Here at 11 o'clock tonight, okay?"
Maggie looked up at a blackbird singing its heart out on Eleanor's rooftop.
"Okay," she said. 11 o'clock tonight."
Then she went back to the house. Eleanor had suggested that Mo set up his workshop next door to the library. There was a little room where she kept her collection of old books about animals and plants, for there seemed to be no kind of book that Eleanor didn't collect. She kept this collection on shelves of pale, honey-coloured wood. On some of the shelves, the books were propping up glass display cases of beetles pinned to cardboard, which only made Maggie dislike Eleanor all the more. By the only window was a handsome table with turned legs. but it was barely half as long as the one Mo had in his workshop at home. Perhaps that was why he was swearing quietly to himself when Meggy put her head around the door. "Look at this table," he said. "You could sort a stamp collection on it, but not bind books. This whole room is too small. Where am I going to put the press and my tools? Last time I worked up in the attics, but now they're filled with crates of books, too."
Meggy stroked the spines of the books crammed close together on the shelves. "Just tell her you need a bigger table."
Carefully, she took a book off the shelf. It contained pictures of the strangest of insects. Beetles with horns, beetles with proboscises. One even had a proper nose.
Meggy passed her forefinger over the pastel-coloured pictures. "Mo, why haven't you ever read aloud to me?"
Her father turned around so abruptly that the book almost fell from her hand.
"Why do you ask me that? You've been talking to Dustfinger, haven't you? What did he tell you?"
"Nothing. Nothing at all."
Meggy herself didn't know why she was lying. She put the beetle book back in its place. It felt almost as if someone were spinning a very fine web around the two of them, a web of secrets and lies, closing in on them all the time.
"I think it's a good question, though," she said as she took out another book. It was called Masters of Disguise. The creatures in it looked like live twigs or dry leaves.
Mo turned his back to her again. He began laying out his implements on the table, even though it was too small. His folding tool on the left, then the round-headed hammer he used to tap the spines of books into shape, the sharp paper knife. He usually whistled under his breath as he worked, but now he was perfectly quiet. Meggy sensed his thoughts were far away. But where? Finally, he sat on the side of the table and looked at her.
"I just don't like reading aloud," he said, as if it was the most uninteresting subject in the world. "You know I don't. That's all."
"But why not? I mean, you make up stories. You tell wonderful stories. You can do all the voices and make it exciting and then funny."
Mo crossed his arms over his chest as if hiding behind them.
"You could read me Tom Sawyer," suggested Meggy, "or How the Rhinoceros Got His Skin."
That was one of Mo's favourite stories. When she was smaller, they sometimes played at having crumbs in their clothes, like the crumbs in the rhino's skin.
"Yes, an excellent story," murmured Mo, turning his back to her again.
He picked up the folder in which he kept his end papers and leafed absent-mindedly through them. "Every book should begin with attractive end papers," he had once told Meggy. "Preferably in a dark colour, dark red or dark blue, depending on the binding. When you open the book, it's like going to the theatre. First you see the curtain, then it's pulled aside, and the show begins."
"Meggy, I really do have to work now," he said without turning around. "The sooner I'm through with Eleanor's books, the sooner we can go home again."
Meggy put the book about creatures who were masters of disguise back in its place.
"Suppose he didn't stick the horns on?" she asked.
"What?"
"Gwyn's horns. Suppose Dustfinger didn't stick them on?"
"Well, he did."
Mo drew a chair up to the table that wasn't long enough for him.
"By the way, Eleanor's gone shopping. If you feel faint with hunger before she gets back, just make yourself a couple of pancakes, okay?"
"Okay,"
murmured Meggy. For a moment she wondered whether to tell him about her date with Dustfinger that night, but then she decided against it.
"Do you think I can take some of these books to my room?" she asked instead.
"I'm sure you can, so long as they don't disappear into your box."
"Like that book thief you once told me about?"
Meggy put three books under her left arm and four under her right arm.
"How many was it he stole? 30,000?
40,000, said Mo, "but at least he didn't kill the owners."
"No, that was the Spanish monk whose name I've forgotten."
Meggy went over to the door and opened it with her toe.
"Dustfinger says Capricorn would kill you to get hold of that book."
She tried to make her voice sound casual.
"Would he, Mo?"
"Meggy?"
Mo turned around with the paper knife, pretending to point it at her threateningly.
"Go and lie in the sun, or bury your pretty nose in those books, but please, let me get some work done.
Until Dustfinger, I will carve him into very thin slices with this knife if he goes on telling you such nonsense.
That wasn't a proper answer, said Maggie, making her way out into the hallway with an armful of books.
Once in her room, she spread the books out on the huge bed and began to read. She read about beetles who moved into empty snail shells, as we might move into an empty house, about frogs shaped like leaves, and caterpillars with brightly coloured spines on their backs, white-bearded monkeys, striped anteaters, and cats that dig in the ground for sweet potatoes. There seemed to be everything here, every creature Maggie could imagine, and even more that she could never have dreamed existed at all. But none of Eleanor's clever books said a word about martins with horns. Chapter 6 Fire and Stars. The day passed slowly. Maggie saw Mo only in the afternoon when Eleanor came back from doing her shopping, and half an hour later gave them spaghetti with some kind of pre-made sauce.
"I'm afraid I have no patience with toiling over a stove," she said as she put the dishes on the table. "Perhaps our friend with the furry animal can cook."
Dustfinger merely shrugged his shoulders apologetically.
"Sorry, I'm no use to you that way."
"Mo cooks very well," said
Maggie, stirring the thin, watery sauce into her spaghetti.
"Mo's here to restore my books, not to cook for us," replied Eleanor sharply. "What about you, though?"
Maggie shrugged.
"I can make pancakes," she said. "Why don't you get some cookbooks? You have books of every other kind. I'm sure you'd find cookbooks a help."
Eleanor didn't even deign to reply to this suggestion.
"And by the way, there's a rule for night time," she said when they had all been eating in silence for a while. "I won't have candlelight in my house. Fire makes me nervous. It's far too greedy for paper."
Maggie gulped. She felt caught in the act, for of course she had brought candles with her. They were on her bedside table upstairs, where Eleanor must have seen them. However, Eleanor was not looking at Maggie, but at Dustfinger, who was playing with a box of matches.
"I hope you'll take that rule to heart," she said to him, "since we're obviously going to have the pleasure of your company for another night." "Yes, if I may impose on your hospitality a little longer. I'll be off first thing in the morning, I promise."
Dustfinger was still holding the matches. He didn't seem bothered by Eleanor's distrustful gaze.
"I'd say someone here has the wrong idea about fire," he added. "It bites like a fierce little animal, admittedly, but you can tame it."
And with these words he took a match out of the box, struck it, and popped the flame into his open mouth. Maggie held her breath as his lips closed around the burning matchstick. Dustfinger opened his mouth again, took out the spent match, smiled, and left it on his empty plate.
"You see, Eleanor," he said, "it didn't bite me. It's easier to tame than a kitten, and almost as easy as a dog."
Eleanor just wrinkled her nose, but Maggie was so amazed that she could hardly take her eyes off Dustfinger's scarred face. She looked at Mo. The little trick with the burning match didn't seem to have surprised him. He shot a warning glance at Dustfinger, who meekly put away the box of matches in his pants pocket.
"But, of course, I'll keep the no-candles rule," he was quick to say. "There's no problem, really."
Eleanor nodded.
"Good," she said. "And one more thing. If you go out again as soon as it's dark this evening, the way you did last night, you'd better not be back too late, because I switch on the burglar alarm at 9:30 on the dot." "Ah, then I was in luck yesterday evening."
Dustfinger slipped some spaghetti into his bag. Eleanor didn't notice, but Maggie did.
"Yes, I do enjoy walking at night. The world's more to my liking then, not so loud, not so fast, not so crowded, and a good deal more mysterious. But I wasn't planning to walk this evening. I have other plans for tonight, and I'll have to ask you to switch this wonderful system of yours on a little later than usual."
"Oh, indeed? And why, may I ask?"
Dustfinger winked at Maggie.
"Well, I've promised to put on a little show for this young lady,"
he said. It begins about an hour before midnight.
Oh, yes.
Eleanor dabbed some sauce off her lips with her napkin.
A little show? Why not in daylight? After all, the young lady's only 12 years old. She should be in bed at 8 o'clock.
Maggie tightened her lips. She hadn't been to bed as early as 8 since her 5th birthday, but she wasn't going to the trouble of explaining that to Eleanor. Instead, she admired the casual way Dustfinger reacted to Eleanor's hostile gaze.
"Ah, but you see, the tricks I want to show Maggie wouldn't look so good by day," he said, leaning back in his chair. "I'm afraid I need the black cloak of night. Why don't you come and watch, too? Then you'll understand why it all has to be done in the dark."
"Go on, accept his offer, Eleanor," said Mo. "You'll enjoy the show, and then perhaps you won't think fire's so sinister."
"It's not that I think it's sinister. I don't like it, that's all," remarked Eleanor, unmoved.
"He can juggle," Maggie burst out, "with 8 balls.
11, Dustfinger corrected her. "But juggling is more of a daylight skill."
Eleanor retrieved a string of spaghetti from the tablecloth and glanced first at Maggie and then at Mo. She looked cross.
"Oh, very well. I don't want to be a spoilt sport," she said. "I will go to bed with a book at 9:30 as usual, and put the alarm on first. But when Maggie tells me she's going out for this private performance, I'll switch it off again for an hour. Will that be time enough?"
"Ample time," said Dustfinger,
bowing so low to her that the tip of his nose collided with the rim of his plate. Maggie bit back her laughter. It was 5 to 11 when she knocked at Eleanor's bedroom door.
"Come in,"
she heard Eleanor call, and when she put her head around the door, she saw her aunt sitting up in bed, poring over a catalogue as thick as a telephone directory.
"Oh, too expensive," she murmured. "Take my advice, Maggie. Never develop a passion you can't afford. It'll eat your heart away like a bookworm. Take this book here, for instance."
Eleanor tapped her finger on the left-hand page of her catalogue so hard that it wouldn't have surprised Maggie if she had bored a hole in it.
"What a fine edition, and in such good condition, too. I've been wanting it for 15 years, but it just costs too much money, far too much."
Sighing, she closed her catalogue, dropped it on the rug, and swung her legs out of bed. To Maggie's surprise, she was wearing a long floral nightdress. She looked younger in it, almost like a girl who was woken up one morning to find her face wrinkled.
"Ah, well, you'll probably never be as crazy as I am," she muttered, putting a thick pair of socks on her bare feet. "Your father's not inclined to be crazy, and your mother never was either. Quite the opposite. I never knew anyone with a cooler head. My father, on the other hand, was at least as mad as me. I inherited over half my books from him, and what good did they do him? Did they keep him alive? Far from it. He died of a stroke at a book auction. Isn't that ridiculous?"
With the best will in the world, Maggie didn't know what to say to that.
"My mother?" she asked instead. "Did you know her well?"
Eleanor snorted as if she had asked a silly question.
"Of course I did. It was here that your father met her. Didn't he ever tell you?"
Maggie shook her head. "He doesn't talk about her much."
"Well, probably better not. Why probe old wounds? And you're not particularly like her. She painted that sign on the library door. Come on, then, or you'll miss this show of yours."
Maggie followed Eleanor down the unlit corridor. For a moment, she had the odd feeling that her mother might step out of one of the many doors, smiling at her. There was hardly a light on in the whole vast house, and once or twice Maggie bumped her knee on a chair or a little table that she hadn't seen in the gloom.
"Why is it so dark everywhere here?"
she asked as Eleanor felt around for the light switch in the entrance hall.
"Because I'd rather spend my money on books than unnecessary electricity," replied Eleanor, looking at the light she had turned on,
as if she thought the stupid thing should go easy on the power. Then she made her way over to a metal box fixed to the wall near the front door, and hidden behind a thick, dusty curtain.
"'I hope you switched your light off before you knocked on my door,' she asked as she opened the box. "'Of course,' said Maggie, although it wasn't true. "'Turn around,' Eleanor told her before setting to work on the alarm system. She frowned. "'Heavens, all these knobs! I hope I haven't done something wrong again. Tell me as soon as the show's over, and don't even think of seizing your chance to slink into the library and take a book off the shelves. Remember that I sleep right next door, and my hearing is keener than a bat's.' Maggie bit back the answer on the tip of her tongue. Eleanor opened the front door. Without a word, Maggie pushed past her and went outside. It was a mild night, full of strange scents and the chirping of crickets. "'Were you always as nice as this to my mother?' she asked as Eleanor was about to close the door behind her. Eleanor looked at her for a moment, as if turned to stone. "'Oh, yes, I think so,' she said. "'Yes, I'm sure I was. And she was always as cheeky as you, too. Have fun with your fire-eater.' Then she shut the door. As Maggie was going through the dark garden behind the house, she suddenly heard unexpected music. It filled the night air as if it had been only waiting for Maggie's footsteps. Strange music, a carnival mixture of bells, pipes, and drums, both boisterous and sad. Maggie wouldn't have been surprised to find a whole troop of fairground entertainers waiting for her on the lawn behind Eleanor's house. But only Dustfinger stood there. He was waiting where Maggie had found him that afternoon. The music came from a cassette recorder on the grass beside the wooden deck chair. Dustfinger had placed a garden bench on the edge of the lawn for his audience. Lighted torches were stuck into the ground to the right and left of it, and two more were burning on the lawn, casting quivering shadows in the night. The shadows danced across the grass like servants conjured up by Dustfinger from some dark world for this occasion. He himself stood there, bare-chested, his skin as pale as the moon, which was hanging in the sky right above Eleanor's house, as if it too had turned up especially for Dustfinger's show. When Maggie emerged from the darkness, Dustfinger bowed to her. "'Sit down, pretty lady,' he called over the music. "'We were all just waiting for you.' Shyly, Maggie sat down on the bench and looked around her. The two dark glass bottles she had seen in Dustfinger's bag were standing on the deck chair. Something whitish shimmered in the bottle on the left, as if Dustfinger had filled it with moonlight. A dozen torches with white wadding heads were wedged between the wooden rungs of the chair, and beside the cassette recorder stood a bucket and a large, big-bellied vase, which, if Maggie remembered correctly, came from Eleanor's entrance hall. For a moment, she let her eyes wander to the windows of the house. There was no light in Moe's bedroom. He was probably still working. But one floor below, Maggie saw Eleanor standing at her lighted window. The moment Maggie looked at her, she drew the curtain, as if she had felt Maggie watching her. But she still stayed at the window. Her shadow was a dark outline against the pale yellow curtain.
"'Do you hear how quiet it is?'
Dustfinger switched off the recorder. The silence of the night fell on Maggie's ears, muffled as if by cotton wool. Not a leaf moved. There was nothing to be heard but the torches crackling and the chirping of the crickets. Dustfinger switched the music back on.
"'I had a private word with the wind,' he said. "'There's one thing you should know. If the wind takes it into its head to play with fire, then even I can't tame the blaze. But it gave me its word of honour to keep still tonight and not spoil our fun.'
So saying, he picked up one of the torches from Eleanor's deck chair. He sipped from the bottle with the moonlight in it, and spat something whitish out into the big vase. Then he dipped the torch he was holding into the bucket, took it out again, and held its dripping head of wadding to one of its burning sisters. The fire flared up so suddenly it made Maggie jump. However, Dustfinger put the second bottle to his lips, filling his mouth until his scarred cheeks were bulging.
Then he took a deep, deep breath, arched his body like a bow, and spat whatever was in his mouth out into the air above the burning torch. A fireball hung over Eleanor's lawn, a bright, blazing globe of fire. It ate away at the darkness like a living thing. And it was so big, Maggie felt sure everything around it would go up in flames, the grass, the deck chair, and Dustfinger himself. But he just spun around and around on the spot, exuberant as a dancing child, breathing out more fire. He made the fire climb high in the air, as if to set the stars alight. Then he lit a second torch and ran its flame over his bare arms. He looked as happy as a child playing with a pet animal. The fire licked his skin like something living. A darting, burning creature that he had befriended, a creature that caressed him and danced for him and drove the night away. He threw the torch high in the air where the fireball had just been blazing, caught it as it came down, lit more, juggled with 3, 4, 5 torches. Their fire whirled around him, danced with him, but never hurt him. Dustfinger, the tamer of flames, the man who breathed sparks, the friend of fire. He made the torches disappear as if the darkness had devoured them, bowed to the speechless Maggie with a smile, before once more spitting fire out into the night's black face. Afterward, she could never say what had distracted her attention from the whirling torches and the showers of sparks, making her look up once more at the house and its windows. Perhaps you feel the presence of evil on your skin, like sudden heat or cold. Or perhaps it was just that the light now seeping through the library shutters caught her eye, the light falling on the rhododendron bushes where their leaves pressed close to the wood. Perhaps. She thought she heard voices rising above Dustfinger's music. Men's voices. And a terrible fear rose inside her, as dark and strange as the terror she had felt on the night when she first saw Dustfinger standing out in the yard. As she jumped up, a burning torch slipped from his hands and fell on the grass. He quickly trod out the fire, before it could spread any further. Then followed the direction of Maggie's eyes, and he too looked at the house without a word. Maggie began to run. Gravel crunched under her feet as she raced toward the house. The front door stood ajar. There was no light in the entrance hall, but Maggie heard loud voices echoing down the corridor that led to the library. "Mo!" she called. And there was the fear back again, digging its curved beak into her heart, taking her breath away. The library door was open too. Maggie was about to rush in when 2 strong hands grasped her by the shoulders. "Quiet!" breathed Eleanor, pulling her into the bedroom. Maggie saw that her fingers were shaking as she locked the door. "Don't!" Maggie dragged Eleanor's hand away and tried to turn the key. She wanted to shout that she must help her father, but Eleanor put a hand over her mouth and pulled her away from the door. Hard as Maggie struggled, hitting and kicking, Eleanor was strong, much stronger than Maggie. "There are too many of them," Eleanor whispered as Maggie tried to bite her fingers. "About 4 or 5 big, strong men, and they're armed." She hauled the struggling Maggie over to the wall by the bed. "I've told myself 100 times, oh, 1,000 times, I ought to buy a revolver," she muttered, pressing her ear to the wall.
"Of course it's here."
The voice carried through the wall without Maggie having to strain to hear it, rasping like a cat's tongue.
"Should we get your little daughter from the garden to show us just where, or do you rather find it for us yourself?"
Maggie tried to pull Eleanor's hand away from her mouth.
"Stop it, for goodness sake," Eleanor hissed in her ear. "You'll only put him in more danger, do you understand?"
"My daughter, what do you know about my daughter?"
That was Mo's voice. Maggie sobbed aloud, and Eleanor's fingers were instantly back over her face.
"I tried to call the police," she whispered in Maggie's ear, "but the lines are all down."
"Oh, we know all we need to know,"
the other voice again.
"So where's the book?"
"I'll give it to you,"
Mo's voice sounded weary.
but I'm going with you because I want that book back as soon as Capricorn is finished with it.
Going with them? What did he mean? He couldn't leave just like that. Meggie tried making for the door again, but Eleanor held her fast. Meggie did her best to push her away, but Eleanor simply wrapped her strong arms around her and pressed her fingers to Meggie's lips once more.